Hello, this is Barbara Van Dalen. Thank you for joining me today on Inner Space. Inner Space is a special program that helps us pay attention to our own emotional health and well-being and the health and well-being of those we love. For this episode of Inner Space, I'm talking with some impressive young people who care deeply about changing the culture of mental health and asking them, what challenges are you facing? What are you doing to keep yourself healthy? And what are you doing to promote positive emotional well-being for those around you? Their answers may surprise and delight you. First up, I chat with singer, songwriter, Whitney Wurz, then co-founder of You Matter, Justin Kay. And finally, I got to spend some quality time with two of my favorite guests ever, my own daughters, Gracie and Mira. Whitney Wurz is a theater art student, a singer, and a songwriter who is using her talent to reach and connect with listeners. We sat down to talk about her mission as an artist, what motivates her to perform, and what she wants us all to know about social media. When did your passion begin for performing? And we were just talking about the songwriting that you do too, which I want to get into a little bit about that. But give us a little background.
Yeah. So basically I started singing when I was in elementary school and I started doing musical theater. And after my first performance, I literally knew that that's what I wanted to do with my life. And it was, I think I was like 9. And I still remember that feeling of, I want to perform. And then I started writing music when I was 12, I think. Mm. And like, I might as well, I'll go into like how I wrote my first song, which also ties into how I became involved with mental health. So I had this friend and she was an internet friend. Like, we only knew each other from social media. And she reached out to me one day and she said that she was planning on killing herself. Mm. And like, at the time, I really didn't even know like what that even meant.
Sorry, she was somebody that you knew on social media. Was she also in this basic area of the country?
No, she lives in California.
Wow.
Yeah, and we were like really close, and we still are actually. And so I found Bring Change to Mind, and I didn't even know about Suicide Hotline. They told me to call Suicide Hotline.
Good for you.
So I called Suicide Hotline, got her address, and within that time period between like when help like arrived and when I called, like I just sat down and I wrote this poem that I turned into a song. And then I recorded a rough little version of it and sent it to her when I knew that she was okay and safe. And then the response was that like I saved her life.
Wow.
And that inspired her, that song inspired her to get therapy and to get help. And
that's very that's powerful.
Really, I know. And
that's very cool.
She's still alive today and she's like, I think 6 years clean of cutting. Mm-hmm. And we talk every day now still. And that song really got me like started and let me get that message out there. You know, once I helped one person, I figured I could help so many more. Mm-hmm. So I got involved with Bring Change to Mind. I'm now a teen ambassador with them. And that song is like has saved so many people's lives. And it's just, I'm in awe.
It says a lot about you and your empathy and your willingness to do something with it. Many people feel things. They feel, they can recognize when somebody's is hurting or in pain, but you actually took that to the next step and did something about it and saved her. I want to go back to the performing part of you. And you said, you know, you knew then, you did that first musical theater and you were hooked. What is it about the performing, the creativity that feeds you that is so powerful for you?
It's very hard to describe, actually. It's like this feeling that it's just pure happiness. Mm-hmm. And like when I'm on a stage and my people are, I can see that they're into whatever I'm doing. It's resonating with them and they're listening, especially to when I sing like my songs and people are listening to my lyrics. It's just exactly what I want, because my goal really is to have as many people hear my music as possible and to inspire as many people as I can. And playing like the lyrics that are so close to me, like to an audience it's like surreal. It's awesome.
I want to shift gears slightly and talk about, Bring Change to Mind, the work that you've done. Bring Change to Mind, for our listeners who don't know, is the organization that Glenn Close started. Mm-hmm. I have had the honor of working with Glenn myself in the mental health space. And you said that you're an ambassador. What does that mean and what do you do?
Basically, I try to talk about the organization as much as I can. I'm actually working on starting a program at my high school. Let's Bring Change to Mind is their like teen portion. Mm-hmm. And so I'm working to start that at my high school. And so everybody can have a safe space to talk about things that people don't talk about.
Why is that important to you?
For so many different reasons. Like I am working through depression and anxiety, and I feel like it's been almost glorified in the last few years.
What does that mean? What do you say?
Well, I feel like people are just throwing out the phrase, I'm going to kill myself, or like, I'm so depressed, but really like, are you in people who really do feel like these things? It almost gets like brushed over.
So let me see if I understand, because this is, I think, a really important point. So one of the things that I mean sort of the community that's been working on these issues of removing barriers, people being focused on their emotional health and well-being, and then underneath that is all kinds of stuff we can talk about. You know, what is depression? What is anxiety? And these are very real elements, conditions. Many of them are things that we all experience at one point in time, sometimes more, right? All this stuff.
Yeah.
So we've all been working and encouraging people to talk more openly about these things. And you're saying that you're seeing a bit of a sort of a, almost like a, not a backlash, but almost a sidebar thing happening where people throw the phrases around.
Yeah.
And it's not really clear that they're authentic, that they're really saying, I'm hurting, I'm in pain, I'm dealing with depression, or I am wildly anxious and I'm having trouble sitting in my own skin, or I've dealt with this trauma and I'm, you know, now struggling so that I don't cut myself. Those are real conversations.
Those are completely real. Yeah.
You're saying that what you see is sometimes people throwing the terms around, and what effect does that have then?
I see that so often on social media and just like people posting like.
And what do people do in response to that? Like if somebody posts that, what happens?
Nothing. Or it's like maybe an LOL.
And so it sounds like your passion is to make it more real, mm-hmm. to make it more authentic. And that, my guess is that ties back to your music. It sounds like you see when you're performing, people are resonating because of that.
Yeah.
Is that, do I have that right?
Totally.
It's a huge concern right now, suicide mm-hmm. in our country. You may know that we just got a report in the last few months from the CDC, Center for Disease, that indicates that suicide is increased in our country, and that one of the groups within the larger population that we're most concerned about is young girls, teens, preteens mm-hmm. and teens. What do you think about that? What do you think just from your perspective, what do you think that's about?
I think it also ties back to social media because, you know, people are starting to use Instagram and Snapchat at a very, very, very young age. And they see, people only put out on social media what they want people to see. Like the happiest, best looking, right. maybe even edited pictures of yourself doing the best things. But that's only like a second of people's lives. And I feel like people, especially young girls, get jealous or think, wait, why don't I look like that?
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't I doing that cool thing? Like this is what happy is. Like this is not what I'm feeling. And then it's like, how can I be this almost, it's like a fake reality.
And it sounds like you think it's dangerous. It's destructive.
Yeah. Cause mm-hmm. it's not really real.
Mm-hmm.
And even I'm like almost a hypocrite of that because I mean, as an artist, like I have to put out and I like putting out all the shows that I'm doing or like the great, the cool pictures,
the performance.
But I never put out the side of like, wow, like today was a really rough day. This is what I'm dealing with or what I'm feeling.
Do you think it's safe to do that?
Oh yeah, totally.
It's okay to do that?
Actually, I've been doing that for a while, but putting out like the real side of me, and I want more people to do that.
Talk about your generation, and obviously you can't talk for all of you. Talk about, if you would, the other sort of scary thing right now for your generation is the opioid epidemic and drug abuse use, substance use, alcohol, opioids. Each generation faces the challenge of how do we deal with this experimentation versus, you know, taking our life in our own hands. Mm-hmm. When you look around, again, your slice of your generation, where are we going? What do you think?
It's sad because people are turning to drugs and alcohol when they're feeling sad instead of really dealing with it head on. Like drugs and alcohol are depressants. it's affecting a lot of people. And again, right back to social media, a bunch of artists and especially like rappers like are, you know, broadcasting their use. And it's almost like
it's promoting it.
Yeah, it's almost promoting it. And kids, younger kids even, are seeing this and be like, oh, that's what I'm supposed to do when I'm a teenager.
You talked about sort of your music as something that is really soothing for you. It takes care of you. The writing is a very positive therapeutic. Are there other things that are really, really important that you have learned that you do to take care of your inner space?
Well, I started going to therapy. And I think that like everybody should have a therapist. Mm-hmm. And that is one thing that hasn't been like glorified is like a therapist. Talking about like what you're feeling like to a professional is, I mean, she's been changing my life and it's so great. And so like whenever I go, it's just, it helps me so much.
It's interesting, right? Because it's so cool to hear you talk about your experience. We all have very complex stuff going inside. Some of us come with, you know, we've had trauma, we've had pain. Some of us just genetically have a predisposition for anxiety or depression or bipolar or whatever. It's there. It's not, we didn't ask for it. Mm-hmm. And to have a place and a person somewhere in your life that is really helpful to sort that out, I mean, that's a gift, right?
It's amazing.
Thank goodness that we in that profession exist, and thank goodness that you found it helpful. That's really mm-hmm. lovely.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I think we have to figure out as a society is there aren't enough mental health professionals around, mm-hmm. period. We're not mm-hmm. going to have enough anytime soon. And so how do we, and that's part of what this show is about, is inviting people like you and others to tell their stories, to inspire people, to inspire listeners, to think about what can be helpful for them. Today, you're sharing how writing is really therapeutic, useful. I think probably a lot of people listening may have things in their head that they probably don't trust that they should share them, even to themselves, even write it down. But it sounds like one of your messages is how powerful that can be.
And it doesn't even have to be lyrics. Like sometimes I'll just journal my day mm-hmm. and it's just a rant.
Sometimes we need to rant,
yeah.
right? We need to dump that out there. So do you ever worry, let's say you make it big. Let's say you break through, and if because that's something that you wish, I wish that for you too. We know and we have seen in the world that that can come with a bit of a backlash. Mm-hmm. Do you think about that? Like how to make sure that if you get there, that doesn't happen to you?
Not constantly, but I definitely think about it. And like I think I respect myself like too much to let myself be like influenced by, you know, everything. I have like a good supports team and everything to keep me grounded. But I'm honestly not worried because my goal isn't fame. It's just to inspire as many people as I can. And if fame comes with that, then so be it. But I feel like with the people around me and like with myself, like I can keep very grounded. Cause like, well, I don't want to, why would I want to change?
Whitney's positive attitude combined with her passion and creativity makes her very effective and compelling. I want to thank her for being a healthy and authentic voice for her generation. Justin Kay is another young person who is using his voice to inspire change and encourage others to care for their emotional well-being. I've known Justin since he was a junior in high school. We recently sat down when he was on break during his senior year of college to talk about the tragic life event that motivated him to co-found You Matter, an organization that harnesses the power of sports to reach and help youth who are struggling emotionally. Your sophomore year in high school, if you're comfortable, tell us what happened to you and your very good friend.
At the end of my sophomore year, I just finished sophomore year basketball season. My childhood friend, his name was Evan Rosenstock. We had grown up together throughout Jewish preschool, all throughout grade school. And then in high school, we both attended rival high schools and we were both competitive basketball players and really close friends. And unfortunately, at the end of my sophomore year, he took his own life. And it was so beyond unexpected just because of the powerful, selfless person that he was, really just looking out for others. And his nickname was Effervescent Evan, just because of how selfless and the personality of who he was. So that was beyond unexpected. And our community was really in shock.
I have the the pleasure of knowing his mom and his sister. And, mm-hmm. and it still is so very sad to think about this young man. I was just looking at a picture of him. You sent some background information about the work you do. And I was reminded of just what a sweet-looking kid he was. Mm-hmm. When you think back about that time now, can you conjure up, can you pull up what it was like for you when you, how did you find out? Did you get a call? How did you know what had happened to Evan? And what happened to you?
To be honest, I didn't get any sort of formal notification. I actually found out through Facebook. Hmm. I was on my Facebook feed one night. I remember it was a Sunday night. I'll never forget it. And I was just scrolling through my Facebook feed and I saw multiple people saying, "Rest in peace, Evan Rosenstock." And I was so confused and, you know, I felt like my heart was coming out of my chest, just like the raw emotion of it all.
Over the years, as you look back, as we do, you know, you get perspective. Mm-hmm. How do you understand now what happened to Evan? Why did he make that decision? What do you understand? What do you know?
Well, from what I know, he had a multitude of factors that really contributed to it. He had a really, really bad back injury that he was suffering from. And on top of that back injury that he needed surgery for, that had been in the middle of basketball season, he had had a very conflicting relationship with his basketball coach to the point where he had felt belittled and bullied, actually, to the point where he just was in a dark place that he couldn't get out of.
So when you say that he was bullied, you mean by the coach's style of...
Yes.
So the harsh
yes.
style of coaching.
Harsh, demeaning, and physically bullying him uh-huh. to the point of him losing sight of himself.
Okay.
And between that, between the back surgery, between already being depressed from the back surgery and then, you know, being on antidepressants and just a combination of factors, I think was really what, you know, led him to take his own life.
Before that happened, Justin, did you know about depression? Did you know much about depression in teenagers and in people in general? Was that something you knew much about?
You know, I heard a little bit about it. A lot of people in school, especially at the time, you know, sophomore, junior year of high school, especially at Whitman High School, too, which is obviously, as you know, a fantastic school, one of the best in the state of Maryland. And I think that I knew a little bit about it because of the culture of what Whitman is. While Whitman is a fantastic school, amazing institution, people at that school, students-wise, have a lot of pressure on themselves to do the best they possibly can in school.
So for our listeners who don't know Whitman, it is one of the Bethesda, which is where we are today. Whitman is one of the top schools, public high school, and the kids who attend that school are kids from the families of the people who run our country, right?
Yeah.
They're diplomats, whether the parents inadvertently put the pressure on the kids or the kids feel it because of what they're the bubble that they live in mm-hmm. here, your sense is that there's tremendous pressure there.
Yeah, there's a very high standard to do well. And if you don't do well, then you're kind of seen as an outcast.
I, too, have had the pleasure of working with that school. There was an interest and an awareness of addressing some of that fairly early on, mm-hmm. right?
Yes, and there was. And actually, the former principal, Dr. Goodwin, who, you know, we both come to know and
yes,
love.
Yes, know and love, yes.
He, you know, really spearheaded changing mental health at Whitman with implementing Stress Busters, which was his program he always did around exam time.
And which was also, for parents, too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, for parents as well.
And kids.
Between that, and he believed in a lot of mindfulness, and he really took the initiative to change a lot of the culture and precedent that had been set at the school.
So you had some exposure to these kinds of challenges, mm-hmm. but obviously losing your friend, because you were 15 at the time,
yeah.
must have been just overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
And it led you to do something pretty amazing for a 15-year-old. So talk about what you and a few others also affected by this tragedy, what you all did.
So immediately after Evan passed away, I had those incredible feelings of guilt and just like, could I have done something? Could I have helped him? Could I have reached out? And, you know, I started realizing, okay, this is not going to be productive for me. This isn't going to help my emotional well-being. This isn't going to be good for me or anybody else who was close to him. So I started coming up with the idea of, okay, what can we do? The community was so shocked and saddened, but I knew there was something that we could do to take this tragedy and turn it into something meaningful.
Why is that so important to you personally, do you think? Other people might have felt it, mm-hmm. and that might have been comforting to them, but you did something with it. Why was that so important to you?
I saw that the community needed it. I saw that there was a void in our community that needed to be filled with regards to mental health and specifically suicide prevention. And I knew that with Evan's passing, we could use the tragedy as an opportunity to educate people and change this culture, really a crappy culture, of ignoring mental health and really, you know, subsiding it.
Looking back at that 15-year-old, did that decision to take action, was that a way to, in a way, help you heal, deal with what must have been, you know, the grief, the possible, you know, depression, anxiety that could have crept in on you?
Oh, 100%. You know, that being able to start something and starting You Matter really gave me solace and gave me purpose when after he passed away, I felt like I had none. And
so you were a little lost for a stretch.
Yeah, I was a little lost. And to be able to, you know, be a part of something bigger than myself was really the, you know, emotional healing that I needed. And a lot of other people that knew him and were close to him needed. And so for us to be able to create that supportive community was really therapeutic to, you know, all those that were immediately affected by his death.
So talk about You Matter, this wonderful organization that you have created that is living still today, right? And growing.
Mm-hmm. So after he passed away, myself and four others approached Sue Rosenstock, his mother, at his funeral.
Oh.
And we all individually said, we want to start a 3-on-3 basketball tournament in memory of Evan.
Oh.
We all got together and we wanted to have this event. And to be honest with you, there was really no huge vision of what we wanted it to be. We just knew that we wanted to take this tragedy and turn it into something positive. And we knew that getting this tournament together and bringing the community together would be able to build resiliency in, you know, a topic being mental health that had been swept under the rug.
So how did the first event go?
First event was fantastic. We ended up raising over $25,000 and we brought together, you know, people from all different walks of life in the community to, you know, change a culture of mental health and not only remember Evan, but promote this resilient community and show people that mental health should be something that's taken seriously, something that's prioritized, that is part of who you are.
It didn't stop with that first event.
So now, if that one event has turned into, obviously, an organization, but I like to say a movement,
mm-hmm.
A movement amongst youth, amongst peer-to-peers, to, you know, show each other that, you know, emotional well-being and educating people on how to, you know, see signs, how to help others, especially in times of crisis and in need, how we can all come together and really help one another.
So you're now finishing up at UNC,
mm-hmm.
and you've continued the work of You Matter in addition to taking a full course load. And the organization is now popping up in different communities and different schools, isn't it?
Yep. It's really amazing to see how the people that knew Evan so well in this community that we built here with You Matter, when we all went off to college, we all took it with us.
Ah, so cool.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, just not even doing a club or an organization on campus per se, but spreading the message of You Matter and those two simple words is so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen the effects of what it has on people. And for us as students to be able to take that to school and, you know, have meaningful conversation with people and really open up the conversation to discussing mental health has honestly been the best part of this journey.
Hmm. Positive coaching has always been a really critical factor for You Matter and the movement. And mm-hmm. talk a little bit about the impact you're trying to have on coaching.
One of our main goals since the get-go has been changing the culture of coaching and
why
in sports.
Why?
Up until recently, the culture of coaching in sports has been very demeaning and belittling, and it hasn't been a coaching culture. It's just been a culture that has needed change.
Did you experience that when you were in different coaching situations, you know, as a kid? Did mm-hmm. you have coaches who were less than kind?
That was kind of an expectation, honestly. Mm-hmm. And I think that was kind of what clicked in a lot of our minds that, you know, this isn't right. You know, coaches should be motivating them, not mm-hmm. belittling them. Mm-hmm. And for us to be able to take the mental health and emotional wellness piece and apply it to sports has really been impactful. Obviously, with the Paths of Coaching Alliance, our main goal from the get-go was to create a Mid-Atlantic regional chapter. But now it's turned into, actually, our last 3-on-3 basketball tournament, our fifth annual one, we raised enough funds to be able to help establish that Mid-Atlantic regional chapter.
Oh, congratulations. Thank you. That's very cool.
At that event, we actually hosted the launch of the regional chapter as well.
There's an alliance of coaching programs
yes.
that focus on this more positive, mm-hmm. uplifting, rather than the sort of, you know, old view of mm-hmm. you tear down a kid
to build them back
to build
up,
which or to provoke them into somehow performing. I was on a panel not too long ago with Michael Phelps, and we talked a lot about how that traditionally was the view that you want to almost provoke mm-hmm. your athletes so that they're angry and then they'll work harder. It's very unhealthy. So what do you see in the college environment? How is it looking to you? What are your concerns? What is contributing? Where there is pain and suffering, what's contributing to it?
It's definitely on the uptrend in the sense that people are starting to notice it more in themselves and in those around them.
How do you know? What do you see?
I see people talking more.
Huh.
I see people not only caring, but caring in the sense that they want to make sure that that person is, you know, the best emotionally that they can be. And I've seen from the time that I've been in high school to, you know, obviously now, that there's been a huge shift in conversations. People are having more meaningful conversations now. Obviously, it still needs a lot of work, but you know, I've noticed that peer-to-peer is a lot more effective now than it has been in years past.
As Justin noted so articulately, we still have a lot of work to do, but I have no doubt that he will continue to do amazing things with his organization and with his future. I am so proud of him. Speaking of being proud, I'm incredibly proud of my next guests, who happen to be my daughters, Gracie and Mira. They traveled to London to help give an hour as volunteers for our second global summit in London last fall. Afterwards, we sat down to talk about their experience of the event, how their early childhood experiences, and having me as a mom, helped shape their lives. We also talked about their future plans and their hope for their generation. While I love all of the interviews I've done, this was a very special one for me. We're here in London. We've just finished the second Global Summit on Mental Health Culture Change, which was an amazing gathering of speakers and activists, mental health professionals, people with lived experience. The Given Hour team, Given Hour, the organization that I'm proud to run for 13 years, put this event on. It was here, Campaign to Change Direction is a driving force behind changing the culture of mental health in our country, in the U.S., and also in the world. This is the work we're doing. And it was incredibly fun and exciting to have this year with us at the Global Summit our two daughters, and Gracie and Mira, with us. They came to volunteer to work at the event, which was amazing to have you both. And so now this is all that, which we'll get into. But you guys worked really hard, didn't you, for 2 days? What did you do while we were putting this on?
Checking people in, the name tags, all that stuff. We did a lot of moving of boxes and signs and
bags.
So many bags.
Well, we woke up at 4:40 every day because we had to, us and the staff had to be there and set everything up and make sure everything was good by the time that you and Randy came.
You worked as staff. Obviously, you're my daughters, but the staff is used to me as boss. What was that like?
Well, we actually talked about that with some of the staff. saying it was a little bizarre because you used to, you know, put socks on my feet. And now you're like running this huge, I mean, the forefront of mental health is you. It's kind of bizarre, but I mean bizarre in the best possible
strange.
Use of the word.
Yeah, strange.
People were coming up to us and being like, oh, your mother's amazing. Like, like, yeah, like, we're obviously so proud of you and, like, honored to be here and all that. But it's like, you make me dinner.
It's and just you hardly ever get into trouble, but when you do get into trouble, as kids do, right?
Yeah, I was
it's
about to say.
A different conversation.
Right. Yeah.
It doesn't really make a difference. I mean, I look at you the same as when we were little, because also, Given Hour has been
around
pretty much as far
long.
As I can remember.
So talk about that, because literally, the two of you, you were five, you were nine, and you both played a role in the creation of this foundation, the foundation of the nonprofit organization that I've run. I mean, so do you want to tell it? Really, what pushed me over the edge to get out of my office and try to create something to help veterans and service members?
Sure. Well, very long story, compacted briefly. I just, from the story, and I think I remember it, us driving. And I do remember oftentimes we'd see vets, and I knew that your dad had served, so we would have conversations because it would make me and little Mira kind of distressed and disturbed to see somebody
homeless
on the side of the road asking for, it was just, I mean, heartbreaking and sickening and so sad. And I guess one of those conversations, I asked you, how can we let this happen? Or how can you let this happen? Because I knew you were like a brain doctor and like and helped people who were hurting on the inside. That's kind of how you explained it to us. And I guess that was that one conversation, that one time was enough for you to be like, yeah, why am I letting this happen? Why are we?
And even at a sort of a more personal, in a way, for me, I didn't want, fast forward 20 years later, which is almost where we are now, we're 15 years later, I didn't want you to turn around and look at me and say, why didn't you do something? Here we are, all these men and women who served, like my father did, like your cousin is.
Yeah,
we have so many military in the family,
yes,
so it's definitely
it was a huge
important.
Issue that I didn't want to feel ashamed, that I didn't try.
Yeah.
I didn't know what I could do, but yeah, it was that comment. And then, fast forward a little bit after that, Mira, as we remember, was, you know, the artist in the family, and she literally picked the color scheme that what became Given Hour, because I would show logos.
I remember. The kitchen of the old house.
and Mira, because your visual sense was much better than mine, and so you both very quickly, you know, came into being part of the organization that is now this international force. You were both so personable. I mean, everybody at the summit, you know, told us how professional and responsible and personable.
It was fun.
You did a great job, and it was really touching. And I wonder, you know, for each of you, what was sort of most valuable. I mean, you talked about sort of seeing it, but I know that there were certain conversations, content, that was interesting to you. We want to reach different generations, and so I want your help in how we reach your generation. But before we get there, what speaker touched you in a way that you were like, whoa, that I...
The most amazing thing for me was seeing white men in suits on their feet clapping for the LGBTQ panel. It was just like, and I told Randy this at lunch, and he got a little like
teary.
Choked up because it's just like, that is how it should be. We should be tolerant of tolerance. I mean, and it was just so how it should be.
Like, I love seeing Nats and all
the
that.
The Getty brother and sister, Nats and August, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
And seeing Gigi was awesome and stuff like that. But I really liked the sports panel.
Leon?
Yes.
The rugby player, Leon Lloyd.
Yeah,
yes.
Who was talking about how...
Both panels.
Like, he got injured so many times. And Gracie and I both play competitive sports.
You're both competitive swimmers.
And you see people get injured all the time from overuse or what have you. And I've played other sports. Like, I've seen my friends in lacrosse get injured. And you don't really think about, like, the impact that that has.
Mm-hmm. On your mental health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he was talking about how Leon was saying that if he got to finish the season, then it would take like 5 years off of his life.
He would choose that.
He would choose to finish the season over like his family, basically, and like his life. If he just got to finish the last six games of his rugby career, which is insane, but that's like how you think about it.
Yeah.
Like Gracie and I both had injuries that stopped our careers, and I really messed up my shoulder. And I remember like right when that happened, it was like I would do anything to keep swimming. Like that was my whole entire life. And I was so lost after that because I didn't know what to do with myself.
Well, that is a perfect segue. Thank you for that. To the other thing I want to talk about, which is we were talking, walking up the stairs to come in here, that, you know, a main theme of this conference, a main theme of our life, one of my, the things that I said to you, I don't know how many times you heard me say this, life can be hard, it doesn't mean it's not good, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because even though I love you both more than ever anything in the world, and, you know, I talked about the bus phenomenon, right, that since the moment you were born, I would happily step in front of a bus to save either one of you ever, any moment. But I can't protect you from emotional pain, and we have all experienced it, and you have both experienced it. And I wonder, Mira, I mean, that losing your swimming career, and there were some times I know even before that, but that was really hard for you, wasn't it?
Yeah. Right after that, I didn't really know what to do. That, like, swimming was something that, like Leon was saying actually yesterday, like, I knew, like, what time I had to be at practice. I knew, like, my coaches. I knew what I was going to swim. I knew how I was going to swim it. I knew the suit that I was going to wear. It's, like, time and place. Everything was so scheduled and controlled. And then after going to practices twice a day for my entire life, and then when that ended, I just, like, kind of freaked out. Like, I lost control of it. I didn't know what to do. So I tried, like, trying to, like, overcompensate for that and like try to like over control other aspects of my life, which is really a not healthy thing to do.
I mean, it was a rough time, and we all, your sister and Randy and I mean, we all knew it. We watched it, we talked, but what helped you get through that?
Well, definitely, like, because I didn't really realize what I was doing until you guys like brought it up. And at first I was like no, like, you're crazy. Like, I'm fine. I'm just, like, figuring out what I'm going to do. A little while after that, I was just, like, sitting in my room, and I was just thinking, I was like, I need to, like, do something with myself. It's not that, because, like, I was so used to swimming all the time. It's, like, the activity. Like, I would just, like, come home from school and just, like, sit or, like, not really do anything. And I was like, I really need to do something. So I looked around for a while and immediately got into a weird sport.
It was pretty cool, though, that you gave it a shot. You were good at it.
Boxing.
Kickboxing.
Yeah. She was a beast.
She was a beast.
So I did that for a little while. That kind of helped me release some just, like,
Anxiety
and tension.
And just anger. Like, I mean, you were pissed off that you had to give up your sport. You were mad about that.
Yeah. It was kind of funny. Like, I was, like, when I would go to, like, the boxing gym, and all these massive guys, like, covered in tattoos, and I'm, like, this small little white girl, and I was like, all right, let's go.
And
everyone was like,
and they were her pals.
I know, they really took good care of you.
Oh, they did. And I talked to a lot of them, because they had, some people that I met there had really hard lives and would do this to kind of, like, as, like, a release, basically. So doing that for a while definitely helped. And then it's also really, like, hard. Like, I have scars on my hands from that, so that's kind of a more violent sport. So after I did that for a while, then I went and like played sports for my school. Mm-hmm. Like I did lacrosse, and then that's how I met a bunch of my new friends. And I found yoga, which I do every single day. Mm-hmm. And it really helped me kind of like center mm-hmm. myself and just kind of like calm down and think about kind of just like my life and what I'm going to do. And now I have like my little yoga routine, and because that's how you raise us to get a job as soon as you possibly can. So we both
work for what you want.
Yeah, and we both have jobs, and now I feel like I'm kind of controlling my life in a more healthy way than like micro controlling everything.
Obviously, as much as I tried, I couldn't protect you from having pain, right?
Yeah. I used to be really angry about that, but. And I'll talk about what that is in 1 second. But now I'm really, really not angry anymore, because I don't think that I mean, I might, but I don't think that I would have such a passion for what I want to do. I'm sure you're fine with me sharing, but...
This is your space.
Well, your ex-husband, my biological father, we haven't spoken in years. But that terrible relationship that I had with him ruined me for a really long time and stole from me what could have been a really happy childhood because of everything else that I had. Mm-hmm. And you did protect me as much as possible. You took us away and, you know, had little fun outings and everything you could do. And it took me a really long time to be okay and to heal. And I'm sure that people think, like, oh, Gracie and Mira must have had the best, you know, because you are the best and what you do for everybody else is mental health. But even I have pain.
And we, even though we may have had the tools, you had to find your way through the anger, the disappointment, all of those things that happened to you. We could wrap around you and love you. And sometimes you had to fight it out with me.
Yeah.
I remember you being very mad at me and when you were younger, understandably, basically saying, why couldn't you protect me from any, you know, of course, mommies are supposed to protect.
Right.
But what helped you get through to where you are now?
So I actually, similar to Mira, it took me a really long time to kind of get back because everybody knows, but in order to fix a problem, you have to accept they have a problem. And I was so angry. I just was defensive. And I struggled with an eating disorder for years and years. And it wasn't until that I, honestly, like my junior year of college, I'd struggled on and off for so long where I was like, I just really don't want to be like this anymore. I don't want to feel like this anymore. And I reached out to you. Mm-hmm. And even my senior year of college, I was like, I'm just not having the easiest time. I'm really struggling. And for me to say to you and to some of my really close friends that I'm having a hard time balancing, I mean, a lot of things, but the eating thing, again, same with Mira, was something that I could fix and control. But it's so true, just having one person listen to you. Mm-hmm. So in a way, me saying that this dad stuff that in my mind should be over and done with by now because he was out of our lives years and years ago, it was still, like, haunting me and chewing at me and poking me and bothering me. And I was like, why is it still bothering me? You're such a loser for, like, feeling
blaming
this way.
Yourself.
Yeah. Like, why you stop being dramatic. Just let it go. Literally just saying, I'm still struggling with X, Y, Z because of all that stuff was a step in the right direction. And, I mean, it sucks every day to feel that way. But it's way better, like, miles better than when I pretended it didn't bother me.
Well, I'm incredibly proud of both of you. You're both amazing young women, strong, funny, adorable, sweet, compassionate, caring, all the things that I always wanted for you, you are. And I know that whatever you end up doing, you're going to be amazing and contribute to our planet. And before we stop, I have one question that I want your help with. And that is, you know your generation. You're 18, you're 22. This work that you saw this week, this conversation that we're having, how do you think that we need to do to reach people your age, to keep this momentum, to get others to help change the culture, be more open? What works?
I don't know. But unfortunately, I had to learn in the worst way possible how to do that. So last year, in the span of about a month and a half, I lost three people that were really close to me. And everyone was just like sad because all this happened and everybody was so sad and nobody really knew, like just like talking about it. Like Gracie said earlier, like one person to listen, you just feel better. It's definitely the talking.
Just the peer-to-peer can be really powerful.
Really, really powerful. Because teachers would just be like, all right, you guys, like, I missed 2 weeks of school, maybe? Mm-hmm. And then, like, our principal, love my principal, but he, like, created, like, vigils for the three students. And, like, we put flowers everywhere and just kind of, it was like celebrating them instead of like mourning.
So what I'm hearing from that, and it was a really painful, scary time, was that the peer-to-peer, you know, getting young people to reach out to each other, getting the information to them so that they know. And one thing that you did, which I share often, is, you know, you have grown up knowing the five signs of emotional suffering.
Yeah.
And you came in and said to Randy and I one night that you knew that one of the kids in your group was really struggling, and you organized kids to go over to where she was because you were worried about her because you knew those signs. And you were the one giving out the information.
She was just kind of saying, she was like, yeah, like I'm done. I'm pretty much done. And she like turned off her phone and just kind of walked out of her house. And we were all like, crap.
And you all went over there.
And we formed like a search party, basically. And we like spread out all over parts of the neighborhood. And we did end up finding her. And like she went to the hospital and she was fine. But it's just like, we were like, we can't let this happen.
We can't lose another. And you didn't. So what do you think reaches college, post-college, that, you know, early 20s, how do we reach them? How do we encourage them to take care of their inner space?
Particularly my age is such a transitional period. All of my friends just graduated college, and it's like, okay, now I'm really an adult, and I really need to, you know, figure out what I'm doing. And that in and of itself causes immense stress, obviously. Mm-hmm. And for those who have a big girl or big boy job now, that's stressful. And for those who don't have a job yet, that's stressful. So it's kind of like a lose-lose almost, you
right.
know?
There's not a comfortable space.
Right. It's everybody's kind of out of their comfort zone because you went from having 4 years of like cushy college, I mean, hard work, but like playtime and like still being supported by your parents to now I need to, you know,
grow up.
Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, I think what it takes is somebody like me to come in and speak, not me specifically, but somebody who's
looks like them,
right, same age group. Because if, no offense, but for a lot of people my age, if somebody who's 50, 60, even 40 years old is coming in and preaching at them, they're gonna be like, okay, cool, next. Mm. But if it makes it, if we turn it into something relatable and something quote cool, because mental health is cool.
It is cool.
Being mentally healthy is cool.
Way cool.
Yeah,
yes.
It's way cool.
Yeah.
In my opinion, even more important than physical health, because it's the one that we have the hardest admitting. I have a few ideas brewing of what I'm going to do when I get back. Whatever. I have a few plans. But just even somebody like me going to schools and talking to the young women, and young men, but I think mental health with women is something that I could really zero in on.
Mm-hmm.
So just having somebody relatable, as cliche as that sounds, to just go make mental health cool.
I never set out to create little activists. You know, Randy, your stepdad, my wonderful husband, you know, he defines himself as an activist, and I don't define myself that way. It's just because I don't know. I'm something else. This is what I do, is whatever it is. But
you're Barbara.
I'm Barbara.
But Dr. Barbara.
Dr. Barbara.
Yes, that was very cute. But I see people picking this mantle up and driving activism, and you clearly are both doing that, and it makes me really proud. Really happy. I love you both, and you're amazing human beings, and thank you for sharing not only with me, but with people who are going to listen to this, that they it will be helpful to them.
I want to thank Gracie and Mira for being so honest and for all they've done during their young lives to support Give an Hour. I love them, and I'm so proud of the young women they are becoming. Each generation has its own set of unique opportunities and struggles. Some generations are shaped more dramatically by world events like wars or natural disasters, others by societal transformations, and still others by advances in science or technology. But regardless of what shapes a generation from the outside, every young person is also affected by factors that affect their emotional health and well-being from the inside. Sharing stories about our challenges frees us to be ourselves and helps us grow. Reaching out for help when we need it is courageous and allows us to move beyond the pain and fear that can overwhelm us. and caring for those we love is as much a gift to ourselves as it is to those we give to. When I think about the attitudes and the actions of young people like Whitney, Justin, Gracie, and Mira, I feel hopeful and optimistic about the future because I know they will work hard to ensure that those in need are able to seek and receive the care they deserve. Thank you for listening to Inner Space. Once again, I want to thank my wonderful team from DCP Entertainment for making this show possible. Y'all can follow me on Twitter at @bvandalen. Please use hashtag InnerSpace on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. And please share your journey with us about emotional well-being.